Welcome to the Pesky Report, episode 346. It is the Minor League Show. We are brought to you by Beyond the Monster. I'm Jake. A little bit of a different setup this week. Derek is here and Hunter is here. It's your normal, regular crew. I'm kind of taking the reins a little bit to start here because Derek actually attended one of the games in Worcester this past week as a member of the press. And so he's going to give us his sort of full report on what happened, what went down there. In the meantime, we're going to start with talking about somebody who had a really big week in Worcester this past week, but also there are possible major league implications. So with this individual, and we're talking about Nico Cavadas, who is the Red Sox, is a left-handed first baseman for the Red Sox. He was drafted in 2021. And there is obviously flux in the big league roster because of the potentially possibly serious long-term injury to Tristan Casas. The Red Sox are going to have to figure out a plan for first base. We're sort of waiting word on the severity of his injury. And by the time you listen to this on Tuesday, the 23rd, there might be some news that has come out about roster moves, about who's going to be coming up. But in the meantime, we're going to talk a little bit about Cavadas, who had a big game, the game that Derek went to, and the possibility and sort of overall, we'll talk about the week he's had, the season he's had so far, and kind of what his outlook is as a prospect, because that question has come up a lot over the course of the last couple of days about, can Nico Cavadas step in and play first base in the big league? So I'm going to throw it over to Derek, who was at a game, I think it was on Friday of last week, in the Woo, as they call it. Derek, what was your take on Cavadas when you were there?
Well, it might have been the most insane Nico Cavadas game ever because it was the OBP game for Nico Cavadas. He went 3-for-3 with a double that hit off the wall in the air that was probably about 3 feet away from being a homer. He also hit 2 homers as well, so he almost had 3. And then he was hit by a pitch twice. So it was the true Nico Cavadas, I'm just going to get on base, bump the OBP up by a ton game. He also looked fine at first. I mean, he didn't really have anything challenging to do per se. So, but I guess in terms of, the simple plays, he looked fine at first base, which is important considering the fact of, the Red Sox, if they need him to play first base, he's going to have to play defense because we've seen the struggles that this Red Sox team has had when they don't play good defense. So that's also important. But I think overall from Cavadas' perspective, I don't know if it was just Friday night. Obviously, he had a good week in general, but I think that one game was the bulk of his good work this week. I mean, overall, the course this week, he went 6-for-16. 3 of those hits were in this game. He hit 2 homers. They were both in this game. He had a double. One of them was in this game. He had 4 RBIs. 4 of his 5 RBIs from this week were in that game. So I think I definitely got him at his best, which is, I mean, hey, that's a really good game to have. It did help that at certain points of the game, the Durham pitching wasn't great. There were some pitching performances that were very bad from Durham, depending on the inning. But at the same time, you face who you face. You got to take advantage of if pitchers are struggling. And Nico Cavadas did that. And overall, I mean, I don't know. The only thing that would have made the game better for him is that double being about 3 feet further and being a homer for a 3-homer game. I don't like it was in terms of good games. That's about as good of a game you can have.
Yeah, he's gotten off to a very solid start overall this season. One of the biggest knock on him, there's a couple of big knocks on his game is about strikeouts. Strikeout numbers are, it's a very small sample, but they are down from last year. He's about 30% so far this year. He was 33% in AAA last year. It was even worse in Portland last year before he got called up. But he definitely has power. He's always had power. So Hunter, I'll ask you about your thoughts in terms of Cavadas so far, but also as somebody that watches all of these games, your thoughts about him right now, if he was going to be called up to the big leagues, how he could handle big league pitching and playing first base defensively.
Yeah. Obviously big week for Cavadas, but he really has had a solid season all year. He's slashing 286, 446, 643, 4 homers. He's drawn a ton of walks, which is something even when he's struggling, he always does. Defensively, he's in that weird position for me where he's nothing great. He doesn't have a lot of range. He's never going to win a gold glove or anything, but he always looks fine on the simple plays. Like I rarely see him make like a boneheaded play. If a, you know, a pop-up in foul territory, he's going to make the play. He's going to get the easy grounders to him. He's not terrible at scooping a ball. As someone who played baseball growing up, I still think that that's one of the hardest things to do. And it annoys me when people get mad at a first baseman for missing one out of every 100. It's those are so hard to judge with the bounces, but he does fine with those. So he's not going to blow anyone away. He's not going to save the Red Sox with defense or anything, but I don't think he's going to particularly kill them. He's not going to be, we've seen Tristan Casas make some spectacular plays in the field. He doesn't have that in him really. But again, I don't think he's going to make a lot of ridiculous errors that get Red Sox fans shaking their head. Offensively, I think he's in a weird spot where he's never going to be a big average hitter. Obviously, he's hitting 286 right now. It's early in the year. It's AAA, whatever you want to go with. But he's going to strike out. He's not going to hit left-handed pitching super well. But he's going to walk, and he's going to have home runs. He shows power. He's going to have random massive games like he had when Derek went. I think he'll fit in well if he's platooning. Obviously, I know Red Sox fans aren't excited to see more of Bobby Dalbec, but if Bobby Dalbec is platooning with him and Dalbec's getting the lefties, he's getting the righties, I think Nico Cavadas could impress a lot of people. He's still not going to hit, you know, 400 against right-handed pitching, but he will more than hold his own against right-handed pitching. The average will be not miserable. Again, he'll draw the walks. He'll hit for power. I think it could even be to the point where there will be fans saying, why isn't he playing every day? Depending on how long Tristan Casas is out. But if they can, they should keep him away from left-handed pitching as much as possible. But if Devers is back and you can have Dalbec and Cavadas platooning at first, I don't think that that's the worst solution in the world. Obviously, Bobby Dalbec has struggled. He's had some bad luck with bad calls. But I think that will kind of play to both of their strengths, where they'll both get to just play against pitchers that amplify their, like, that they'll have the best matchups against. So maybe not the most ideal solution. I know there's some free agents out there that people would prefer to go after. But I think if Nico Cavadas is put into that position, he'll be more than fine. I think he'll get on base. The defense won't be miserable. And he'll drive in some runs with some 440-foot homers, which will at least get people excited for a little bit.
I will add to real quickly on the fact of Nico Cavadas. Like, there's also a chance you get one of those Nico Cavadas hot streaks, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but, like, there's a decent chance you call up Nico Cavadas and he gets on one of those hot streaks for a couple of weeks, and maybe all Casas needs is a couple of weeks, you know, hopefully, right? And then, like, that's all you need. Or maybe, heck, maybe Dalbec gets on a hot streak, right? We've seen it before with him. I know Faith and Red Sox fans aren't necessarily high for that, but you never know, right? Things have to turn around eventually for him. At least that would be the thinking in if you're looking at it positively. So there's also, I think, in terms of if you call up a guy like Cavadas, you very well could get one of those hot streaks for 2 weeks where he's just mashing baseballs.
Yeah, so where I'm at on Cavadas is I think that I agree with what I think both of you have said, which is that offensively you'd have to put him in the right situations. And that means he can't, he would never start against a left-handed pitcher. And again, this is the option that the Red Sox have. There's not a lot, as far as like somebody that's going to come up and play first base regularly, there's not really a lot of other options at Worcester. Like there's a few other guys that can play there that have some experience, but for the most part, it's pretty much Cavadas. But as far as like playing against lefties, he's only one of 12 this year against left-handed pitchers. Last year, between the two levels of minors he was at, he was 10 out of 84. So it's not good. He's going to struggle to face lefties, and you put him in the big leagues. Like I would not imagine that he would really ever see any at bats against left-handed pitching. So it is a platoon situation. I think that you can get by there. I think defensively, I agree that I think he can make the routine plays, and I think he can you know, scoop the ball out at first base and do those things. I worry about, you know, if he's just sort of okay defensively in the minors, the speed of the game in the majors, it's something that does concern me. It's something that even Tristan, like, it was kind of a weird thing with Tristan Casas, where all through the minors, Tristan Casas had this reputation that he was an outstanding defensive first baseman, and you could see it a lot. And then he got to the big leagues and he was not good last year. And the thing that's unfortunate is that I thought that this year so far, Tristan Casas had made huge strides defensively, and he was like a big league level, like really good first baseman. And then of course he gets hurt. Cavadas, I worry about that. And it's a team that can't really afford to have more guys that will struggle defensively. I know that first base, there's this reputation of you just stick a glove on a guy and put him over there. But, you know, Ron Washington in the movie said it's incredibly hard, and it is incredibly hard. So I would just, you know, caution folks that there would be a learning curve with coming up and playing defense in the major leagues for somebody like Nico Cavadas. But I think that he's, you know, he's not super young. He's 25. He was I think he played 4 years in college, or he played extra years because of the pandemic year and all that stuff. If people are curious and interested, there are some amazing, you know, he's hit some of these in the, you know, Nico Nukes is what we say here. You know, Derek got to see two Nico Nukes, almost three. So it would be fun to have Nico Nukes in the big leagues. He's a big time power hitter. He doesn't get cheated. If he gets a hold of one, it goes a really long way. There's I think a pretty famous video of him hitting a home run at when he was still at Notre Dame you can find around, but he must've hit it like 550 feet or something. It was just ridiculous. One really interesting thing about Nico Cavadas: if he is called up and he plays in the big leagues, he will be the first draftee from any of the four Heim Bloom drafts to make the big leagues. So that will be, that is a, I would not have anticipated that it was going to be Nico Cavadas. he was an 11th round pick. He signed for double the Red Sox, did give him double the slot value to keep him from, I guess he had some leverage to go back to school, but so maybe he was like a senior, but he could have been a fifth year senior because of the pandemic here. Like, but he would be the first of the Bloom draftees to make it to the big leagues if he comes up. And it would be very funny that he would beat out the likes of even like Luis Guerrero or Marcelo Meyer or, you know, any of these other guys, you know, even like a Phillip Sykes or somebody like that. So we'll keep an eye on that. Hopefully, like I said, by the end of the day, certainly by the end of the day, Tuesday, before they play they open the series with Cleveland, there will be some idea of it. It sounds like there's going to be a bunch of roster moves, guys going to the 60-day IL. They could put Brian Mata on the 60-day. They could put Brandon Walter on the 60-day. There may be some other position players possibly that come up if they decide, like, hey, they need to put, they want to give Devers a few more days, so we're going to IL him. And then that's when you're talking about possibly a guy like Eddie Alvarez getting added to the 40-man, or Nick Sogard, who, you know, we've talked about Nick Sogard a lot. Eddie Alvarez is... you know, he's like 34, so he's no, you know, he's not a prospect, but he has some big league experience, and he would be a guy that could play third base and maybe even a little shortstop and second base. So that's it on Cavadas. Let's talk a little bit about the rest of the week in Worcester. And I'm gonna throw it to Hunter, and then I'm gonna talk, and then Derek's gonna give us his report from the game. So Hunter, who else stood out to you in Worcester this week?
For me, a big part was the bullpen pitching. Jorge Benitez now has 0.82 ERA in 11 innings. He's given up one run. He's walked seven batters, which isn't great, but he struck out 13. He has a 0.83 batting average against. He's been ridiculous. And then Zach Kelly has not given up a run in 9 innings so far. In fact, he's only given up one hit in 9 innings so far. He's walked 8 guys, but outside of that, he's been phenomenal. And with the Red Sox pitching situation right now, there's a chance someone could get called up soon. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was Zach Kelly. He's already on the 40-man. He's been basically unhittable in 9 innings. And then obviously Luis Guerrero has continued to look really good. He's only thrown 5 2/3 innings this year. They've kind of given a lot of other people more bulk appearances, and then more, like, a lot of guys seem to be getting like 2 inning appearances, And a lot of guys seem to be getting, you know, three outings in a week where it seems like they're really being careful with how they use Luis Guerrero. So that's kind of interesting. I don't know if it's a situation of this is AAA and, you know, obviously you're still trying to develop a lot of guys, but also maybe you're obviously also still trying to win. And maybe it's just, they trust some of these guys more, you know, Zach Kelly has major league experience. If it wasn't for the injury last year, I feel like he would still be in the majors right now. Jorge Benitez has just been phenomenal. So is it a case of they're just putting out the guys that they think have the best chance of holding the lead? Or is this a plan with Luis Guerrero where they're being cautious with how they use him? They don't want to injure him. They're limiting him to like an inning at a time. I don't know if this is game plan or situational. But the bullpen has a few pieces this year that have just been phenomenal, which looking back to last year, Worcester had so many pitching problems. So it's good to see they have multiple guys standing out as being impressive. And that's not even talking about, you know, someone like Richard Fitz, who continues to be fantastic in the starting rotation.
Yeah. A lot of good options. It still is very odd to me that Zach Kelly has not been an option for the big league team, given the amount of injuries and the fact that, you know, somebody like Joe Jakes got called up. Maybe the whole point of calling up Joe Jakes was so that they could eventually DFA him and use his roster spot. Although he still had minor league options. That was kind of a strange thing. I got to talk about Chase Meidroth. He's AKA fucking ball player Chase Meidroth. Derek got to see him do some stuff too, but, you know, 7-for-17 this week, he had a homer and a double. I think that there's a shot that we see him in the big leagues this year too, possibly. There probably have to be a lot more injuries, but the Red Sox clearly believe in his bat. They were aggressive with placing him in Worcester this year, and he just can do everything right. He is a solid defender at multiple positions. He gets the most out of his body, that's for sure. He gets the most out of his talents, and he knows how to put the bat on the ball. He the strikeouts are not something that really is, you know, part of his game. And I think there's going to be a place in the big leagues eventually for Chase Meidroth. And again, he's just a fucking ball player. I did just want to mention quickly too, and I'm not sure if Derek had the chance to see him, but Vaughn Grissom's rehab is sort of continuing there as well. He played back-to-back games at second base at the end of last week. So, and it seems like his timing is starting to come back at the plate. He's been hitting a little bit more. So that's a big move. And that's going to be a huge help to the Red Sox, of course, as well, having sort of the guy who was supposed to be their everyday second baseman, who's a right-handed hitter that they badly need, back in the mix. So, all right. So Derek, give us the Woo Sox report from your time there last week.
All right. Well, I'll start with Vaughn Grissom since it kind of flows from what Jake ended with. I did get to see Vaughn Grissom play. Also got to talk to him shortly for a little bit. I think I'll say that just from talking to him, I think he's a guy Red Sox fans are going to love. Great guy. It's like super energetic, but like in a good way too. Like he's not like, and like super high work ethic. I think when Chad Tracy was talking about him, it was clear that there's a feeling of Vaughn Grissom being a guy who's one of the hardest workers that they had there, in Worcester. There on Thursday, which was the day before I went, it was raining, game got postponed, whatnot. So instead of doing turf work, because couldn't do any turf work, Vaughn Grissom decides to take grounders in the hallway in the clubhouse on the carpet to get some work in. That's the kind of guy I want on my team. I'll just say that. So I think from everything that I heard, it seems like Vaughn Grissom's going to be a guy Red Sox fans are going to love, which is great. I also talked to him about playing in front of Fenway eventually. And he said basically along the lines that he's really excited to play in front of the Red Sox fans at Fenway, and that, you know, it's an honor to put on a Boston jersey, whether it's Red Sox, Patriots, Bruins, or Celtics. So I think overall, guy that, like I said, Red Sox fans are going to love him. I think in terms of Chase Meidroth, he had a Chase Meidroth type of game when I was there. He went 2-for-4. With also drawing a walk and being hit by a pitch. So he's on base 4 times. So he's bumping the on base percentage up as well. I think with everything with Meidroth, I was impressed. He actually made a couple, I forget what inning it was, but it was like two back-to-back batters hit like pop-ups and foul, One was, I think, in foul territory, and the other one, I don't remember if it was foul or just, I think it was like just foul, but it was like deep towards left field, and he went back and made a nice play on it in a ball that really he was the only one who had the chance to catch it. In terms of Von Grissom, also had, he only played 5 innings on Friday. He played 7 on Saturday for a doubleheader. He didn't play on Sunday, so he's getting close, but he's not there yet. In terms of, he's not ready for the big leagues just yet. In terms of the bullpen, I didn't want to touch on Jorge Benitez because with Jakes being DFA, depending on what happens with him, I know Cam Boozer's in the big leagues right now, which you know, Cam Boozer's another one of those guys who Chad Tracy just was, you know, super excited to see him get the call at the big leagues. And according and per Chad Tracy, there were a lot of tears shed that Thursday afternoon, night, whenever it was, when he was able to tell Cam Boozer that he was getting called up. And Chad Tracy actually said that of all of the guys that he's got told to call up, Boozer was his favorite, getting to tell him that he was getting called up to the big leagues. But in terms of Jorge Benitez, I think Benitez, to me, is next lefty up. If they need a lefty for the bullpen for whatever reason, if they choose to go with a lefty, I think Jorge Benitez is next up above Lucas Lucchi. Lucchi's wife and kids actually were in front of me. I was sitting outside the press box in the state, like the seats right next to the press box, and his wife and kids were in front of me. His kids are super cute, but I do think Jorge Benitez has a little bit of an edge on him in terms of that. And then the other thing, too, I wanted to add in terms of just in general on my trip was with Nathan Hickey, because I know it wasn't the day I was there, but it was the day after when Casas gets hurt. They finally put Nathan Hickey at first base. Took them how many weeks into the season? They felt they should have done it earlier. They didn't. Also, too, Jamie Westbrook hit a homer as well in his first at bat. In coming in for Von Grissom, which is insane. He had 2 at-bats. He went 2 for 2, but also with a walk in subbing in for Von Grissom after the 5th inning. And 4 RBIs. And the thing I have to add to, this isn't Wu Sox related. This is just game related in terms of the game I was at, because they were playing the Durham Bulls. And heading into the 6th inning, the Durham Bulls bring in this pitcher, Colby White, and I immediately go, oh my gosh, what a generic name that is, Colby White. I'm like, watch him not be any good. His first warm-up pitch, they're doing the mascot race. They're going around like the dirt behind home plate, up near the wall behind home plate. The mascots are running around. First pitch, wild pitch in the dirt, bounce, takes a couple hops back, and hits one of the mascots in the foot. And I go, there's no way this guy's getting out of this inning. I just know, I'm like, there's no way this guy's going to have a terrible inning. If he's throwing a warm-up pitch in the dirt, he's hitting a mascot in the mascot race. And then what do you know? He goes 2/3 of an inning, gives up 4 hits, 5 earned runs. He gave up a homer, struck out just one person. He didn't walk anyone somehow, but he hit Nico Cavadas. He hit Tyler Heineman as well. So I guess it didn't walk anyone. They hit 2 guys with pitches. And I think he threw about 4 or 5 pitches in the dirt, because there were a couple stolen bases that inning for sure, due to pitches in the dirt. So I thought that was hilarious, because he steps on the mound, and the first thing I recognize once the inning starts, he has the most Ryan Brazier-like mannerisms I've ever seen. He gets on the mound. He brings like his elbow up to like his face, like wipe his like face off or whatnot. I'm like, the only thing missing is for him to break his neck sideways.
I was gonna say, did he do the head crook? No,
he didn't do the crooked head. Didn't do the broke neck. Didn't go with broke neck Brazier. But it was about as close to Brazier as I've ever seen without it being Ryan Brazier.
Well, and, he sounded like he pitched like Ryan Brazier like last year with the Red Sox. Yes, you know,
it was telltale. This guy's due for a bad inning.
Yeah, it's always funny when you're at a game and you see a guy warming up and you're just like, this is not going to go well.
Yeah, you can just tell they don't have it.
Tell.
Yes.
And all I could think of is Bull Durham, like, hit the bull, but it doesn't sound like he did it on purpose. So,
The other thing I will say, too, is funny, we're talking about warming up. Von Grissom goes out there for the top of the first inning and goes to second base. Cavadas throws him a grounder, and Von Grissom's like calf kind of paying attention, but like kind of not. He was like kind of, you know, just getting out there, whatnot. And he goes to scoop it up, and right under the glove, ball rolls into the outfield. And I'm just like, oh no, that's not great. And then what do you know? First batter of the game, hits a sharp liner to his right, makes kind of a diving play, throws the guy out. And I'm like, all right, we're fine.
Yeah,
we're going to be okay. Second base is all right. So that was another interesting little thing that happened. But overall, it was a good trip. Shout out to the Woo Sox, because every single player I talked to was super nice and whatnot. Nice. Melvin Adon's a massive human being. I got to say that.
Yeah.
Hey, I was watching his bullpen. His bullpen was a little bit better than his performance in the game Friday night. But, yeah, just massive human being. And, yeah, I don't want to stand next to him anymore. I feel like he could, like, break me in half or something. Like, he's just massive.
Some of these guys are huge. So, all right, cool. Well, so that's going to do it for Worcester. So let's move up to Portland, the team that is, you know, continuing to get a ton of attention with the prospects that are there. But we're not going to start with the big three this week. We're going to start with Matthew Lugo, who it's one of the best stories. There's been a lot of great stories involving the Red Sox minor league system so far this year, between the big three all doing pretty well, although one of them of the big three had a very bad week, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. The Garcia brothers doing what they're doing, and some great stories. Cam Boozer making it to the big leagues, and some great pitching performances at the lower minors especially. But Matthew Lugo has been one of the best sort of redemption stories so far. And again, we're very early in the season, but no matter what, this is fun to see about Matthew Lugo, who was like a top 15 prospect not even that long ago for the Red Sox. And now he is, you know, completely fallen out of the Sox prospects top 60. But he might be on his way back, possibly, with the performance that he's had so far this season. So he had a huge week this week. He was 7-for-16 with a homer, 10 runs batted in. He had more walks than strikeouts, which is a great sign for him especially. So I'm going to hand it over to Hunter. Maybe, Hunter, you can give us some context about Matthew Lugo's sort of trajectory as a prospect. He was a second-round pick in 2019. And kind of what the last couple of years have been like for him, and kind of what you think is different so far this year with him.
Yeah, to me the big thing was 2021, when he had like his first full year in single A, and he had like a solid season, 270, only hit four homers, but there was like, oh, there's more power in the bat than that would suggest. And then 2022, between he was phenomenal in high A, 288, 344, 500. He hit 18 homers, 10 triples, 25 doubles. Got called up for three games in Portland. He went 1-for-12 with a double. But that was kind of when there was all of a sudden like the Matthew Lugo going from this young guy who had a lot of, at the time he was a shortstop, he had a lot of struggles at shortstop defensively, like a ton of errors. But there was like this, oh, he's really athletic, so the defense will come around. And all of a sudden now all the hitting potential seemed to be realized, and he flew up the prospect ranks, and all of a sudden he's going to be starting 2023 in double A. And it seemed like everything was kind of coming together for him. And then, and I think at that time he had already switched positions. I think by the time 2023 came around, yeah, he played a lot more third base. But the issue was, or I'm sorry, by the time 2022 came around, he played a lot more third base, mainly still a shortstop. But then when he got to double A in 2023, everything kind of came crashing down. He had a sub 300 on base percentage. I think he played one game at shortstop. He was playing a lot of third base, a lot of left field. But he only hit five home runs in 83 games. 23 doubles isn't terrible, but the strikeouts were a problem. He had 89 in 83 games compared to 19 walks. And it was such poor timing for him, kind of, with like the Red Sox system becoming so loaded all of a sudden. Like by the end of 2023, you have the big three. You have Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony, Kyle Teal. You have Miguel Blaze. You have Nick York. You have Yoelen Cespedes. There were so many people. And those are just the big names. Like so many other people leapfrogged him. And like you said, he found himself out of the Sox prospects top 60. And it was one of those weird things where it was like, he's still like right now he's 22 years old. Like it's easy to forget because he started in Double A last year. This is, and cause he's been around since 2019. This is a guy that is still incredibly young. Like 22 in Double A is not by any means is that old. But things just kind of, it was just such a perfect storm of crap for him. Just everything going wrong at the worst time. And it culminated to the point where he started this year in Double A and didn't play in a game until April 10th. Like he was buried on the roster. And even when he was playing, he was batting near the bottom of the lineup. He's kind of I don't want to say relegated, but he's kind of basically just playing left field at this point. In fact, I think that's all he's played this year. He's played three innings. Oh, no. Yeah, no, he's only played left field, and then he DH'd one game. So he's only played left field this year. And I don't want to say it was like the Red Sox gave up on him because he's still in Double A, but it really kind of felt like the Red Sox gave up on him. I mean, not playing the first week of the season, being buried on the depth chart. And he came in immediately. I think he hit a home run in his first game this year. Yeah, he did. He went 2-for-3 with a homer in his first game. And then piling on to the luck in his second game of the year, he got hurt and had to be taken out of the game and then missed the next day they had a doubleheader. He didn't play in the first game, but he played in the second. So it wasn't too bad. But since then, he's been phenomenal. Like you said, 7-for-16 this week. He's hitting .357 with a .471 on base percentage. Like I said, 19 walks last year. He's already up to 6 this year in just 9 games. So if he can keep that pace, he's going to shatter that number. And we saw in his most recent game, Lugo get moved up in the lineup. So clearly, like, the Red Sox are seeing this. They're rewarding him, and they're seeing if he can produce higher up in the lineup. And in his first game moved up, he went 1-for-4. He did walk and he hit an RBI double. So still continues to be good. But it's just, this is a guy that 2 years ago we were talking about as, you know, one of the more exciting prospects in the system. Like you said, he was somewhere around 15. And it seemed like there was heavy potential for him to move up a lot higher at the time. He was still 20 years old. And then last year, just the wheels fell off. Everything seemed to go wrong. So many people came into the system and impressed. And it's just, it's obvious, it's only 9 games so far, but we're seeing all of the potential that people talked about 2 years ago with the hitting. And I mean, he even made a great play in left field the other day. So the hitting, the athleticism, translating to his defense, everything's kind of coming together, at least for a short stretch. And it's just, it's fun to see him working his way back up into a name as a legitimate prospect and someone who could either work himself into a role with the Red Sox at some point or become a very valuable trade piece, which that's something that if you're getting a guy that kind of fell out of favor to all of a sudden work himself into a big trade piece. I mean, if you can prove that you're a good hitter in Double A, that's going to make a lot of teams more interested in you. So very quickly, we've seen him rise back up.
Yeah, so I did look it up, and I'm assuming this was his peak. Last year, the beginning of season rankings for Sox prospects, he was all the way up to number 12, and Roman Anthony was 11th. So it's big drop last year, and it was warranted just because of the fact that he just struggled so much with Double-A pitching. It is definitely a byproduct of the players that they have currently that he has had to move to left field. He's always been very athletic, and I've always kind of viewed him as his ceiling is probably as a utility guy that can play all over the place. But seeing him, you know, making good consistent contact, like not striking out a lot, I think is really maybe shows that he's turned a corner offensively. And I think he's always going to be, you know, maybe he wasn't going to be a shortstop long term, you know, probably more of a third baseman if he was going to stay in the infield, maybe play some second base too. But outfield might be the best spot for him. and sort of somebody that can has the capability of playing some other spots too. So I think that there's possibility in his future. And so it's really great to see these sort of redemption stories. And Derek, you were the one that sort of brought up Matthew Lugo on the show. And I just want to kind of get your thoughts about his season so far and how he's looked to you.
Well, I remember I was on the 17th. I'm at Fenway at Hauk's amazing performance. And I remember I'm sitting in the outfield, right? So, and it's in between innings. And I'm like, you know what? Let's go on my phone. Let's put the Portland game on. It's 2-2. I see bases are loaded. Guess who's coming up to the plate? Matthew Lugo. What does he do? Put the ball in the left center gap. Center fielder, like, I don't know what he did. Dovana. He missed the ball, basically. It rolled basically all the way to the fence, and Matthew Lugo had a 3 RBI triple at the end of it. So overall, like, that was just, like, the one time I turned the game on because I'm at Fenway. Typically, like, I'm not going to put anything on my phone if I'm at Fenway. I'm just going to watch the Red Sox game because I'm at Fenway. But I figured, yeah, let's turn it on, whatnot. It's in between innings. I don't have anything else to do, whatnot. Let's put the Sea Dogs game on. And Matthew Lugo, 3 RBI triple. Maybe that's saying something. Maybe Matthew Lugo's, you know, back, maybe. I don't know. I will say this, though, in terms of Matthew Lugo. When everyone looks at the Red Sox system, they look at the kind of logjam of infielders, and it's like, okay, when are we going to have someone who's not a shortstop or someone who's not an infielder? Matthew Lugo moving to left field is a benefit for him because it gives him a clearer path to the big leagues as well. Because, yes, you have Roman Anthony in Double A, and obviously Anthony's ahead of him, but what I mean more so is in terms of if he was playing infield in Portland, you have Meyer, you have Nick York right now, you have Edinson Paulino, you have Blaze Jordan, and AAA, you got Chase Mydroff. We're talking about Nico Cavadas maybe getting a big league opportunity, although that is due to injury, but still, he's been playing well enough in AAA. We're discussing him for an opportunity in the big leagues. So, whereas you look in the outfield, you start looking towards AAA in the outfield, and it's okay, you have Dalton Guthrie, but like, he's an organizational piece. He's not, you know, some prospect. And so when you start looking through the pieces, it's like, yeah, you have Roman Anthony Double A. Miguel Blaze is great, but he's in low A, right? He's still a ways away. So I think for Matthew Lugo, I think just this move to outfield in general, if he's back to the Matthew Lugo that we know that he was, if not better, he's so much more valuable to this organization because he's proving right now that he can play left field. And I don't want to get all, you know, hypothetical and whatnot, but you start going up towards Red Sox big leagues and, you know, what comes to a point, let's say the Red Sox are trying to trade for a starting pitcher, like rumors where they were all off season and this team wants an outfielder. Well, if Matthew Lugo can prove he can play outfield and he could be a trade chip, or maybe it's not Matthew Lugo that gets traded. Maybe it's someone else. But because they know they have Matthew Lugo, they're maybe okay trading someone else that they wouldn't have been had Matthew Lugo not bounced back and have a good year potentially, right? So I think in total, he becomes so much more valuable to the Red Sox because he can play outfield. So I think overall, like, one, I'm rooting for him. He's only 22. He's got, you know, baseball in his blood. He's Carlos Beltran's nephew. So I think overall, obviously small sample size, but at the end of the day, it's looking promising so far. Small sample size, yes, but you know, I like to look at the positives of it, and the positives are Matthew Lugo is playing arguably the best baseball he has in the Red Sox system, like at all, yeah. At any point. But I think that can only be a positive.
I agree. I think that, like I said, it's great to see somebody who, you know, had kind of gotten lost in the shuffle, come back and, you know, be somebody that is an asset to the Red Sox one way or another, like you said, whether or not it's going to be here or elsewhere. So I want to talk, let's kind of move on. I wanted to mention the sort of return of Alex Hoppe, who he didn't, you know, necessarily have the greatest week. So we're kind of moving from offense to pitching here. You know, he started the year on the IL, so he missed about the first two or three weeks of the season. I think it was an arm injury. So obviously the Red Sox were careful with him, and he came back this week. And again, he appeared in two games. He had pitched three innings. He did give up two earned runs. He gave up three runs, two earned, and he did have three walks and three strikeouts. But the thing to know about Alex Hoppe is that he throws very hard. And that is something that this Red Sox team very clearly values. They very clearly value the velocity that guys can throw with. And I think that Alex Hoppe is somebody who could be on a fast track to the big leagues if he gets his stuff a little bit straightened out. Again, he had, it was just kind of some working out some rust this week, but that bullpen with the Sea Dogs continues to be great with Christopher Troy and the other guys that are there too. So somebody to watch there. And I assume that, you guys will talk about probably the other members of the kind of big three. And I don't like to harp on negative things, but I do need to point this out that Roman Anthony had a pretty bad week. He had 13 strikeouts and 24 at bats. So just wanted to mention it. Am I concerned long-term because he had a bad week? No, he's like still the most, has as much talent as any prospect in the big leagues pretty much at this point. And he's going to have bad weeks. He's also, you can't forget how young he is still for Double A. I mean, you think about the fact that Kyle Teal is, quite a bit older than him, having played at college, and he's in Double A and at, 20 years old, Roman Anthony makes it to Double A. He can't even legally drink and he's in Double A, and he's probably going up against a lot of guys that are probably 25, 26, 27 years old. So don't worry about it. These guys are going to have bad weeks. He's going to get back on track. I just wouldn't be too concerned about it.
If it was the Padres, he'd already be in the big league. So
this is true because they,
they're weird, man. They're weird.
They just promoted a 17 year old to Low A.
Right. Padres. And they did that with them.
They tried screwing Ethan Salas's.
Right.
They moved him back. They put him back to Low A. They promoted another 17-year-old to Low A.
They threw him up into Double A. He was hitting like 120 in High A, and they were like, "Oh, go to Double A." And then he hit.
To be
like,
fair, it was only for nine games,
Angels do stuff like this too.
Yeah.
And then who knows? Will Jackson Holliday end up having to go back to Triple A? Maybe. I don't know. All right. So that's what I want to talk about for Double A. Hunter, what do you got for Double A?
I do just want to say with Alex Hoppe, throws hard. And like you said, wasn't the best week, but I mean, his first outing of the year was really solid. So it was kind of more just one rough appearance. So that's still, like you said, he's still just working out the kinks, but it's good to see that he still already is having productive outings. Wickelman Gonzalez had a really weird week. His first appearance of the week was a start. He pitched two thirds of an inning. So he only got two outs, got absolutely rocked. And then he pitched again on Sunday out of the bullpen and threw three shutout innings, gave up one hit, one walk, struck out four batters. I just kind of want to point out that no one should worry about anything about him moving to the bullpen. Portland has done this before. I remember 2 years ago when I went to games in Reading, they did the same thing where a lot of different guys were getting turns in the bullpen. And I talked to Chris Murphy about it after, and he said it's just they like giving guys bullpen days because not everyone's going to be a starter. And especially for Gonzalez in this situation, he threw two thirds of an inning.
Yeah.
They have a six-man rotation now.
Right.
They have a day off on Monday. I think they just wanted him to go out there and get more innings, and he looked great. I don't think it's anything to worry about.
Let me just jump in. I think the fact that the reason why they did that is because he only got through two-thirds of an inning in that one outing. Like, they wanted him to get more work in during the week. It has nothing to do with Wickelman Gonzalez is not going to the bullpen. Like, that's not that. Maybe is that long-term where he ends up in the big leagues? Possibly, but not now. They're not going to do that until they have to. So,
And Hunter Dobbins had a great bounce back start. He went six innings, only allowed one run. He's only struck out two batters in 10 innings this year, which is a little strange. But that's not really anything to worry about, in my opinion. He's not the biggest strikeout guy, but the strikeouts will come. It's early in the season. He's still hitting 97 on his fastball. There's nothing to worry about there. He'll be fine. And then the guy I really want to focus on, though, is someone a little strange, maybe. I want to talk about Mickey Gasper, who is, he came over with Dick Fitz in the Alex Verdugo trade. He's 28 years old, so he's kind of a weird person to talk about when you're in Double A, but he's having a phenomenal season. He's slashing .321, .500, .536. This week he went 5-for-12 with 2 doubles and a homer, 4 walks and 3 hit by pitch. All 3 came in one game. I don't know what the issue was that game, but clearly they didn't like him. And 3 strikeouts. He drove in 1 run and he scored 5. And the reason I want to talk about him is because he's a catcher slash first baseman. And I think with the possibility of Nico Gavadis getting called up, I very much see a world where Mickey Gasper moves up to AAA then. Obviously already old for AA. He has experience at first base. He even played 2 innings at third last year, which isn't really anything. But the thing that surprised me, I knew he played second. I didn't realize he played 131 innings at second base last year. So just like a little extra something that if need be, he can play other positions. I know, cause I mentioned this yesterday on Twitter, and I had a couple people say to me like, oh, well, he's a catcher and Tyler Heineman's going to be back down. They won't need a catcher. But he can play other positions, mainly first base is the main one, but they can throw him around if they need to. But switch hitter, and just someone that I feel like just has been really solid all year, but just dominated this week. And the Sea Dogs were clearly playing the hot hand. He was getting a lot more playing time this week. And I think he's someone that should get – he's earned the promotion. It's not like they're just calling him up out of necessity if they call up Nico Cavadas. And I just – he's really interesting to me because he's someone that I could see carving out a road to the majors at some point as this guy that can play catcher, first base. If you really want to throw second base in there, you can. But a guy that can play catcher slash first, it's just a good depth piece. He's a switch hitter, clearly has a good eye at the plate. He's always patient, and just had a he's such a steadying hand in that lineup. It seems like every time whenever he comes up in the lineup, if there's a quick inning going on, he'll find a way to grind out like an 8-pitch walk or something and make the pitcher work and kind of calm everyone down. He had such a phenomenal week, and with everything going on in the majors, I think he's someone that when AAA starts making, when all those flurry of moves happen, I wouldn't be surprised if he's part of that flurry.
Would make sense for sure. Derek, what do you got for Portland?
I'll just clarify on Gasper. He wasn't in the Verdugo trade. Did come over from the Yankees, but it was via the minor league Rule 5 draft. So I'll just clarify.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
I'll say this. Hunter Dobbins had the rare feat of going 6 innings while only striking out 1 batter. He did give up 4 hits, just 1 walk, only gave up 1 earned, 1 run. It was a solid start. I mean, I find it weird because I was so pissed off because Jordan Hicks on my fantasy team went 5 innings with no strikeouts, and he walked like 4 guys, so he had put up negative points in my league because of how the scoring works, even though he went 5 innings and only give up a run because he didn't strike anyone out. So this Hunter Dobbins start just reminded me of that, and I was kind of when I was looking at the numbers, I went, wait, he only struck out 1 person? I'm like, yeah, that's a little weird. Zach Penrod continues to just shove. He's just pitching. I mean, there's only so much. He gave up 1 hit in 5 1/3 innings. Didn't give up any runs. I mean, what else do you want me to say? Because, you know, I don't want to repeat what we've been saying for the last, 2 weeks on Penrod. And then Isaac Coffey, the Coffey man, did go 5 innings. Did give up 2 runs, but he had 7 strikeouts, so just 1 walk. So continuing the nice strikeout-to-walk rate for Isaac Coffey, which it felt like last year there was a lot of times where he'd have 8 strikeouts, just 1 walk, or no walks, or 2 walks at the most. So he's continuing that.
Yeah.
Philip Sykes had a nice little week. But overall, though, I mean, it wasn't like – outside of Matthew Lugo, there wasn't anyone who had, like, an insanely, like, overpowering week. I mean, I know Meyer didn't have the greatest week. Anthony, obviously, had 13 strikeouts.
Well, Meyer did have a walk-off.
He didn't have,
He still only has one game this year that he hasn't had a hit, so
– Yeah. You know, oh, no, I'm not saying he was, he's been bad. I'm not saying that, but he didn't have, like, yeah, I mentioned, Matthew Lugo went 7-for-16 with five extra base hits.
It was just kind of a, it was kind of a ho-hum week, I guess, for the Seahawks. But they wore their teal uniforms, and on that teal uniform day was when they had the walk-off for with Marcelo Meyer. So,
and they went 5-1.
And they went 5-1. So let's let's flip it around. I think most of the focus of this episode will end up being the high miners, the low miners. You flip that around. Both teams had 1-5 weeks in Greenville and Salem. So Greenville, especially, it's a bit of a light week in terms of highlights. I'll kind of let these other guys talk. I guess I'll go back to you, Derek. Like, who, you know, we didn't really pick somebody to really talk about. Like, who did anybody stand out to you this week in Greenville?
I mean, Alan Castle drew 5 walks. I mean, just all he does at this rate. I mean, he hasn't been hitting great, but like, you got a 375 on base this week. You take it. I will say Caleb Bolden, 2 games out of the bullpen, 4 2/3 innings. Gave up just 2 hits, 2 unearned runs, but in total 6 strikeouts, 2-1 walk. And then Jonathan Brandon, 2 2/3 innings out of the bullpen in his 1 game. He did give up 5 hits, did give up an unearned run as well, but he also struck out 5 as well. So, I mean, it's not a ton. I mean, Eduardo Lopez had 6 walks. Yippee. I mean, there's not a ton to talk about.
The team didn't have a great week. There were no really big, especially standout starting pitching performances. Connelly Early has still gotten off to a good start, but nothing like really crazy there. I'll just bring up Juan Chacon, who I had tried to get the Juan Chacon fan club going last year. He got hurt. He struggled. I'm kind of just leaving that in the past. The hot fan club can be Derek's thing with Alan Castro. But
might need to make a Matthew Lugo one. We'll consider that.
we'll take that under advisement. Juan Chacon is healthy again, and that's great to see because he's a very dynamic player when he is healthy. 5-for-16 this week with 2 doubles. He also had 2 stolen bases. He's a very good defensive player. He has the ability to kind of make highlight reel defensive plays in the outfield. And it's good to see him healthy and doing his thing. The only other one I'll mention is that Dalton Rogers looked good. He had a decent start, 4 2/3. He had 5 strikeouts, just 2 walks and 1 earned run. Good to see him keeping his walks down because he has very good stuff as a lefty, and the Red Sox are continuing to give him opportunities to start. So, Hunter, any thoughts on Greenville this week?
Yeah, a quick note on Juan Chacon. He has an 8-game hitting streak going on. So
wonderful.
Just throwing that out there. Brian Gonzalez hit another home run this week. Mm-hmm. He's up to 4 this year. He's the power's ridiculous. He's also struck out in every single game he's played in this year, so that continues to be a bit of an issue. But I mean, if he keeps hitting the ball 500 feet, it doesn't really matter. Luis Ravello continues to. I really think he's going to have just a fantastic year in High A. He's got a little 3-game hitting streak going on. He's only hitting 250, but importantly, he did draw a walk this week, so he now has a 298 on base percentage. That was something we talked about last week, how he hadn't drawn any walks yet. Eduardo Lopez, I know Derek quickly said he had 6 walks, but he's another guy that I think just has a really good approach at the plate, and I think it's going to pay off for him at some point. He's only hitting 214 at the moment, but he's got a 395 on base percentage. He's walked 9 times compared to 4 strikeouts. He's doing all the right things at the plate, and he's produced in the past, so I think give it a couple weeks and he'll have really solid numbers. And then pitching wise, I just want to mention Max Carlson got promoted to High A and made his first appearance there. He's been solid this year. He's got a 5.40 ERA. But to me, the big thing is he has 15 strikeouts in 10 innings. Very clearly has some interesting stuff. And I think the fact that the Red Sox promoted him to High A so quickly, despite the fact that his numbers weren't anything incredible, shows you how they view him. I think they see the really good raw stuff and think that he can handle High A pitching. And I'm interested to see where it goes from here.
So that's going to be pretty much it for Greenville for us. And then Salem, there's like a little bit more to talk about. Similarly, they had a 1-5 week. They were playing at home, and it's a tough time to hit. Although I would just say that like some of these guys are doing pretty well hitting wise for Salem so far to start the year. I think that the guy to focus on is Nathaniel Uten, who so had a really big week, 7 for 19. He had 6 walks to just 2 strikeouts, which is awesome to see. And he had 2 doubles. He's a fascinating prospect. So who is Nathaniel Uten? We've talked about him on the show quite a bit, but just for a refresher for people, he was signed in 2022 as an international free agent. He was given a $400,000 bonus, which is a pretty, you know, decent sized bonus for sure. He's very wiry frame, left-handed hitter. You know, he is probably, you know, a corner outfielder type. And but he is like a really interesting skill set. And he was a real sort of standout last year in 2023 in the FCL. And he had the chance to come up to Salem at the end of last year. He earned that opportunity after a really strong showing in the FCL. And he's continued that so far in Salem. And so he's somebody that, again, had a good week. It's still early in the season. It's all small samples at this point, but he did pretty well. I don't know if you guys have anything to add about Uten in particular. The pitcher I wanted to just mention was somebody who's gotten off to a decent start this year that I don't think we've mentioned his name so far on this. Maybe just in passing we've mentioned him, but that's Jojo Ingracia, who is a left-handed pitcher out of Cal State Fullerton, who the Red Sox drafted last year in the 14th round. And they signed him for the sort of $150,000 I wouldn't say maximum bonus, but it's the maximum that you can give somebody without it counting against the bonus pool. And he had like a really solid week this week. He was 4 innings, one hit, 2 earned runs. He had 4 walks and Eduardo Rodriguez Cruz's stats, which is somebody that hopefully somebody else.
Eduardo Rodriguez Cruz.
Elmer Rodriguez Cruz. Combined 2 different players there. That was pretty funny. Jojo Ingracia had 4. He did have 4 1/3 innings out of the bullpen, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk, no earned runs, and 4 hits. So, again, young guy, this is his first taste as a professional, because he did not pitch in FCL last year. He was somebody that they held out. I'll just mention right now, then one of you guys can bring it up, just because I had pulled up the tweet from a friend of the show, Ian Kundle, about Elmer Rodriguez Cruz. He said, and who we are not totally positive, we might have to ask Ian if he's just going, or somebody from Sox Prospects, if he's just going by Elmer Rodriguez and he's dropped the Cruz, because we're not seeing the Cruz as much recently. But basically, a couple days ago, Ian tweeted that he's averaging 95 on his fastball so far, and in his start this week, he hit 98. Last year, he was only at 92.6 average on his fastball, so that is a substantial velo bump for anybody. And he had 9 strikeouts. He has 20 strikeouts in 11 innings so far this year. And just this week, again, I listed off his stats when I thought I was talking about somebody else, but he had 4 innings, 1 hit, 2 earned runs. So he did have 4 walks and he hit a batter, but he also had 9 strikeouts. So with that velo bump for Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, ERC for that bump. With that bump for ERC comes the sort of need to harness it. So that's going to be something that he's going to have to learn. But that is an incredible development for the Red Sox and for ERC that he could has that level of a velo bump, and it seems like it's sticking, because a lot of these guys get velo bumps in the offseason. You see it in spring training, and then it kind of dies away as the season goes. So we're 3 starts in, and he's managed to maintain it. So we'll see what happens going forward. Hunter, go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's someone that I think all of us already viewed, and Sox prospects, MLB, whoever you talk to, already viewed him as a at least intriguing, at the very least intriguing pitching prospect for the Red Sox. Young guy, a lot of raw stuff. But so adding, 3 miles an hour on average to his fastball certainly isn't going to hurt anything. And just a note on the name, the Salem announcers still call him Elmer Rodriguez Cruz. So I'm just going to go off that because okay. I'm sure that's something that would be in their notes or that he would have told them or something. So I would assume he's going by Elmer Rodriguez Cruz.
Yeah.
We also might need a new t-shirt for Velo jumps.
I think you're just horny.
It's a good t-shirt idea, okay? It's a great t-shirt idea.
Just all letting it hang out here, the Pesky Report. Anyway, Derek, what do you got on Salem?
I will add on ERC, though. I'll kind of add to the ERC discussion. Where's the Red Sox pitching lab? Because it seemed, did they steal it from Tampa or something? Or is that finally happening? But no, in all honesty, though, I don't know. We haven't talked about it a ton. Obviously, this is kind of a discussion before the season. But since the season starts, we haven't talked about it. But obviously, the Red Sox, they brought in Craig Breslow for a reason. They brought in Justin Willard for a reason. They brought in, is it Kyle Bodie? Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Mm-hmm.
They brought him in for a reason. Obviously, I know Andrew Bailey's not working with the minor leaguers, but it'll work with them at some point should they get, you know, close to the big leagues in spring training, like big league spring training and whatnot. So, like, all these guys are brought in for a reason, and it's for pitcher development because that's the one thing the Red Sox have not been able to do in the last decade plus. So, I mean, they're starting to get some benefits of, like, on the big leagues right now from Houck and Whitlock. Obviously, he just got injured, but Cutter Crawford, et cetera, right? Brian Baio, obviously, can't forget about Brian Baio. So, is this, like, are we getting a way? I want to bring that up because it's like, is there maybe going to be a wave of Red Sox homegrown pitching, which is arguably the most valuable thing you can have? Because that's the one thing. If there was one, if you can make one critique about the 2018 World Series team, it's where's the homegrown pitching. That's like the only critique you can make on the team. Because it's like, yeah, that team's the best team in franchise history. But the one critique is no homegrown pitching. If the Red Sox can figure it out in pitching development and you can build homegrown pitchers, with the amount of position player talent they have right now, and if you're seeing guys like ERC get velo bumps, look at what Yordani Manegro did last year, kind of, you know, his breakout year last year. You have Luis Perales. Heck, yeah, even so, Jennings and Pies is still in low A, right? And you add, like, they brought in Sandlin, and they brought in Fitz, and, like, you have Wilkelman, you have Angel Bastardo, you have Hunter Dobbins, you have et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Could we see pitching start to become a strength of the Red Sox player player development? Like, I'm not saying it will, but so far it's looking very promising. I'll just say that.
Well,
in terms of pitching throughout the organization,
it's really interesting to me that you mentioned that this issue with Red Sox homegrown pitching goes back decades. I mean, it goes back literally, like, you know, the Red Sox have not been able to develop pitching on a consistent basis since, like, Lou Gorman was the GM when I was born in the 80s. Like, they just, like, when the Red Sox went to the World Series in 1986, they had four homegrown pitchers in their rotation. And that was incredible. That was unheard of. The Red Sox have not had anything remotely like that since. And you would have to go back to, you know, I was thinking after you said that, Derek, about there was no real homegrown pitching on the 2018 World Series team. If you think about the four Red Sox World Series teams this century, the impact homegrown pitchers that they've had are, in 2007, John Lester made like one start in the World Series. Jonathan Papelbon, of course, was the closer. And then 2013, John Lester was the ace of that team. And Clay Buchholz was involved. He did pitch in that playoff run.
Felix Dubront pitched for that team, though.
That's true. Yeah.
Let's not forget about him. Right.
So that's like five guys total over the course of four, like, 04, that entire, nobody on that team was homegrown except for Trot Nixon. Like, everybody else had been acquired by, like, literally go run down the entire, and I guess you could say Kevin Youkilis too, but he was, like, tangentially involved in that team. Like, he was, I don't even know if he was on the playoff roster for those teams. And then, yeah, 2018, the position players, a lot of them were homegrown. Alex Speer wrote a book about it, but the pitchers were not. So this issue that the Red Sox have had for literally decades about not being able to develop starting pitching or to develop homegrown pitching really at all, it's been really nice to see that this current iteration of the Red Sox, like, you look at, you know, three-fifths of the starting rotation that we've seen this year in, you know, how can Crawford have both been incredible and Brian Baio has pitched amazing his last time out. And he's, you know, been solid. The Red Sox starting pitching has been obviously really great so far this year, but the three fifths of the rotation is our homegrown guys. Garrett Whitlock doesn't really count in that because he was a Rule 5 guy. And of course he's hurt right now, but then also, and you know, Pavetta's injured too, but, so we're seeing like the Red Sox do deserve credit, should deserve some credit for this. The fact that right now, like Tanner Houck has been one of the best pitchers in baseball, and so is Cutter Crawford, and those guys are homegrown. And I guess we do have to give David Dombrowski a little bit of credit because those were guys that were picked when he was in charge here. And I would say that he probably had a little bit more influence in Tanner Houck getting picked because he was a first round pick than Cutter Crawford, who was like a 19th round pick or whatever. We're seeing these waves of guys that are coming up. And I think right now, yeah, at Salem, there feels like there's a wave of pitchers, like all of these guys that they drafted last year, all the crap that Chaim Bloom got because he never drafted pitching. That was always BS. The Red Sox have drafted a ton of pitchers the last couple of years. The problem is that they didn't use high, and Ian wrote about this on their site in that piece that he wrote a few months ago. Like, they didn't spend high-level picks on pitching, and that's why they're in the position that they're in. But they drafted tons of pitchers, and they signed tons of pitchers out of the international market. And those guys take time to develop. It takes time to bring those guys up. And guys get – we've seen time and time again guys get hurt too. And, like, it's just – but I think, like, right now you're seeing – I feel like this Salem pitching staff is just, like – feels like they're loaded with talented pitchers, and it's guys that were drafted in the last couple of years or guys that were signed as out of international the last couple of years. So yeah, I think you're totally onto something that we're looking at this like wave of pitching that's coming.
And I'll add to back to the 2018 point too. Like, before anyone says Eduardo Rodriguez is technically not homegrown, I understand that Red Sox did develop him somewhat, but like I know Whitlock's not homegrown, but like he's — it's not homegrown, but I was using him more as the point, the effect that Bailey and et cetera, those guys are having on their team. But go look at 2018. The real homegrown guys are Matt Barnes and Brandon Workman, who are first and second round picks. And not to say that they're bad picks, they ended up being relievers on a World Series team. But it's just me. If you pick a guy in the first round as a pitcher, you're kind of hoping they become a starting pitcher. Like, in an ideal, perfect world.
Yeah.
Now, you can't have a perfect world. I'm just saying, if the Red Sox pick an elite pitching prospect with their first-round pick this year, I will be the happiest person on the planet. If they somehow magically spin a wheel and Chase Burns falls to them, I will go insane. It's going to happen. It's not going to happen. We also said Kyle Teal wasn't going to fall to the Red Sox, and that happened. True. So, like,
the thing in I'm glad you brought up the draft, because like Carlos Collazo did a mock draft today, and again it's so early, the draft is not for another like 3 months, but I feel like the bloom has come off the rose on a lot of the college pitching this year, and it was like there are three guys that were picked college pitchers that were picked ahead of where the Red Sox are drafting in Carlos's mock. And then there was like no other pick. Like he had the Red Sox taking Vance Honeycutt from UNC, who's an outfielder at 12. And then there were like no pitchers for the next, like until like around pitch 20. So it's like a lot of these guys, like the Jonathan Santucci's of the world, like the guy from Duke who's from Leominster, like some of these guys have, it's too bad, because it's bad for the Red Sox, because it seems like the Red Sox could take a pitcher at 12. But they might be reaching for it. But we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the draft going forward. Is there, before we wrap up and I throw it to Derek to do Guess the Prospect, do we have anything else on Salem that we wanted to?
I wouldn't mind just throwing out both the Garcia brothers are continuing to kill it. But Stinson's slay. He's got a .325 batting average, two homers. He's 10 for 10 on steal attempts. Johan Fran has looked really good behind the plate. He's thrown out six batters in 23 attempts, which isn't anything phenomenal, but it's not bad. And throwing people out in the minors seems so much harder to me, because a lot of those pitchers aren't good at all at keeping base runners from taking leads, from getting jumps. They're much more wild, so you're dealing with a lot more pitches in the dirt. Miguel Blaze had a two-hit game on Sunday. He's been up and down, but it was good to see he had a hard-hit double and then an infield single. It's always good to see him show off the speed. And then I just want to throw out Marvin Alcantara is hitting 180 this year, but he did have 3 two-hit games this week. So that's something to keep an eye on, because obviously heavy struggles, but very clear signs of breaking out. And he's someone that could quickly become a big name in that lineup.
He was up in the 20s on Sox Prospects last year, too. So
yeah, that's a name to watch. And just last quick thing on Blaze, like, yeah, only 5 for 25 this week, 3 doubles, he had 3 RBI. He only had 3 strikeouts and 1 walk and 25 at bats. So that tells me that he's doing all the right things and he's making contact and stuff to hit the balls, just aren't falling it. So, he's been really good. It just seems like this sort of maybe the Salem effect is kind of hitting him in terms of his numbers.
He didn't play a ton last year, but he played because he got injured, but he played a lot more than he had this year. And he already has more doubles than he had last year. He only had 3 doubles last year. He's got 4 this year and he had 11 steals last year. He's already up to 7 this year. So it's great to see him healthy. And even if the slash line's not great, it's the talent is so very clear when you watch him.
Exactly. All right. So usually Derek is the one that just kicks off Guess the Prospect, but I'm going to turn it over to him to try to stump Hunter and I for Guess the Prospect.
Yes. I'm excited about this. We have 10 clues. I don't think we're going to need all 10. We're going with the weird first clue. This first clue is either going to give it away right away, or it's going to stump the living crap out of both of you.
All right.
Now, I will ask for this first clue. Do not answer until I am done reading. This is a long clue. Because this prospect has been teammates with the following players. Marcelo Meyer, Nick York, Zaydon Rafaela, Tristan Casas, Willy Abreu, and Trevor Story, as well as, at one point in time, Fernando Tatis Jr., Yordan Alvarez, Julio Rodriguez, Randy Arozarena, O'Neill Cruz, Andres Jimenez, Jeremy Pena, Keibert Ruiz, Luis Campusano, and Jesus Luzardo.
What? Okay.
Like I said, it's either going to be.
I don't know if he's still on the list, but is it Emmanuel Valdez?
Nope.
That was my guess.
I don't think he's a prospect. I don't think he's a prospect anymore. But
this was on the top 60. That's the rule.
Emmanuel Valdez is still.
I think they only update it. You know, I don't think they'll update.
I don't know if he is or not. But it's not a terrible guess.
No, he's.
He's not.
No, this player's signing team was the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, okay. I think I got the hint now. Okay, I think I figured out the first hint at least.
This player made their pro debut in the DSL. This player received a signing bonus of $25,000.
Is it $25,000? I'm terrible with signing bonuses.
This player was born in Venezuela.
Is it Brian Mata?
It is Brian Mata.
Oh. So was the first hint like he played on a national team? And that's why he was
first hint, no? The first hint, which this was going to be the next hint, the next two hints, actually, he appeared in the 2018 Futures game. I wasn't going to say the year, but that's where he was teammates with Tatis, Alvarez, Arozarena, O'Neill Cruz, Andres Jimenez, Jeremy Pena, Keibert Ruiz, and Jesus Luzardo. And then he was teammates with Julio Rodriguez and Luis Campusano in the Arizona Fall League, which he has played in 2 separate seasons.
That is pretty good. I gotta give you that. That is a good guess. The prospect. So I think Hunter is on the board now for the year.
It's 2-1.
I needed that now. So get off the Schneid.
So
I figured the first hint was either gonna give it away because it's like, oh, this guy's been in like some futures game or whatnot or something along those lines, because that's when it was the world versus US for the future for the futures game. Mm-hmm. So Brian Mata, actually in that futures game in 2018, he walked Key Brian Hayes, gave up a single to Bo Bichette. Then he got, who'd he get out? He got three guys out. He went an inning different way. He threw a wild pitch. I know he ended up striking out Brendan Rodgers, and he got who's the first baseman that he got out? I don't remember, but basically, it was Joe Adell. He got out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He struck out Brendan Rodgers, and he got Nate Lowe out to end the third inning. He actually came in relief of Jesus Luzardo in the third inning.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah, it's crazy how long he's been around. He did tweet recently that he's healthy. So I don't know. I still think he's probably a 60-day AL candidate. Yeah. And I don't know.
Well, they're going to give him the full 30 probably.
He's out of options, and they're going to have to figure it out. But
yeah.
Well, that was a really very interesting. I think we have – that was a guess the prospect unlike any other that we've had so far this year. So, all right. Or ever since we started doing the podcast. That was really, really unique. So, good stuff, Derek. So, that is going to do it for the minor league edition of the show. Please check us out on all relevant social media channels. Check us out on Twitter or X or whatever they call it now. Check us out on Instagram. Make sure that you are following us. Make sure you're subscribed to this. If this is your first time listening, the Minor League Show drops every Tuesday. And so for Derek and Hunter, I'm Jake. Thanks very much for listening, and we will see you next time.